Historian, episode 545 of the Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, who is starting to maybe question his decision to log on to the Google universe.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and geez, this week is just packed with Star Wars and comic book goodness. Pinch me, I must have gone to heaven.
And, you know, 2015, if we could maybe just stop with this weekly, loss of icons thing that we have going on here, I would really appreciate it. We are going to be starting off this week, as usual, with some genre news, and then our midweek show is going to be the best and worst of the week, and then we will be wrapping it up with the rest of the content that aired. But as I said, this is our new show. That said, we still probably have some spoilers that we are going to give, so Edmund, I think there's some kind of disclaimer you need to give.
Absolutely. If you have not been keeping up with the news, some of this may surprise you, so you may be horribly, depressingly, will it ever end? Spoiled, but this is the news show, so hopefully you won't be too annoyed that we do that to you.
That's right, because most of this actually constitutes spoilers for us as well. So we're all in the same boat. Sometimes we don't even know what we're about to read. That's just how it works. All right. Well, in this case, we might as well just get started off with some particularly unfortunate news. And Edmund, I don't know if the Google universe is being nice to you or not yet, but if not, I can take this one.
No, sadly, it has in fact cooperated. So I do get to be the one to announce to those who haven't heard yet that author Terry Pratchett did die this last week at the age of 66 following his long battle with Alzheimer's. So admittedly, unlike some of our other losses recently, this one has been expected for a while. He has been on a bit of a grand tour, being a grandmaster guest at various conventions, but this was the week when he did finally totter off to Discworld. So he will, of course, be much missed, it's still a blow, even though it's, as I said, it was somewhat expected that it was going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yes, in this case, it may have actually been something of a good thing, in the sense that he had been on a long road to this point, and there is a certain point at which it's just more of a mercy for it to be over and done with. Especially with Alzheimer's, it can be very difficult, obviously, on the family as well. Any thoughts, Gary, Edmund, on Terry Pratchett?
Yeah, it's. I can't say I didn't know the man personally. I never had a chance to see him at a convention. But, you know, as I was starting to broach my way into hard science fiction, Star Trek books were my sort of gateway. Then I started picking up Asimov a little bit, and I'd stopped there for, gosh, probably a good year or so. And then I wanted more. And his books were one of those first, I guess, those second tier of science fiction books that I started to dive into before I went, you know, into Heinlein and stuff like that. And so it was nice because, well, I mean, it was science fiction. It always just had a hint of fantasy to it with some of the creatures and things like that. So it was a nice way to sort of really get deeper into the science fiction world. And you know, I'm grateful for it. I really felt that he did have a unique voice with his writing. And while I can't say we'll miss it because the books or digital files should always be there for us, I'm grateful that he wrote what he did.
Yeah, I mean, what else can you really say about it, right? Edmund, anything you want to add?
Unfortunately, he was one of the authors who I did not delve into that much. So all I can say is I am looking forward to reading more and letting him live on through that.
Hear, hear. All right, well, let's get into what will hopefully turn out to be more positive news for at least for fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Gary, why don't you go ahead and hit us with some... news on that front.
Well, I almost want to have a bell for casting call news. Here we go, more casting news. We just got notice in the last week that Hawkeye will also appear in Captain America: Civil War. So I guess they don't want to quite call it Avengers 4 yet. But given that we have Robert Downey Jr. appearing, of course, Captain America appearing. Now we're going to have Jeremy Renner in this as well. There's not much of the cast left to include to make this the Avengers movie. So I'm sort of curious what type of role they have envisioned for him. You know, I think of the teaser that Captain America was going to be in the last Thor movie, and then we got 20 seconds of Loki impersonating him. So that didn't seem like much of anything. But I imagine this does have to sort of be a little bit more of an inclusive a role. we still want to see the fallout from S.H.I.E.L.D. disappearing out of the Avengers universe. And obviously, Hawkeye had to be involved in it somehow, and maybe that will get a little bit of a better sense of what was going on with him, why he wasn't able to help Cap while Black Widow was. So I'm glad he's included. I really think they need to have a lot of people into this initial salvo of the Civil War, to especially as they're starting to draw lines and pick sides. Having him actually appear, I think, will definitely strengthen whosoever side that he appears on.
Yeah, I think that is a good idea. And like you said, this is probably going to be fallout from a couple different things, notably the destruction or the fall and eventual rise of S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess you could term it, and then also the Age of Ultron and everything that's going to happen in that film, which is coming out in just a couple months. Yay! In which case, we'll have probably a lot more to say about it. But at any rate... Hawkeye was kind of missing from the events of S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything else. And you would think even, you know, of all people, yes, granted, he's probably still in demand as far as films are concerned. So that might have something to do with scheduling. But I'm not sure why he didn't show up on S.H.I.E.L.D. at any point, because it would have been a natural place for him to show up. Eventually, I guess. Let's see. Any thoughts on that, Edmund, before we move on?
No, just that in terms of that this is one of those cases where sometimes trying to throw too many characters in can be a problem, but the way the MCU's been doing it, I just remain hopeful that it seems like everything they've tried so far has worked, so I will be happy to wait and just see the results.
Mm-hmm. I would say that that's probably the fairest way to look at it. All right, because we love casting here, as Gary said, we should have a little bell or something that we ring every time. Lucy Lawless, speaking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and her kind of one-off role earlier this season, she is going to be co-starring in the upcoming Ash vs. Evil Dead series. The sequel to the Evil Dead film series will include not only Bruce Campbell, but now Lucy Lawless. She is joining the cast as Ruby, a mysterious figure dead set on crushing the uprising of the malicious Deadites at any cost.
I wonder what accent she'll use.
The only problem is she believes Ash is the source of the evil's resurgence, so it doesn't look like Stars is going to have some loving action going on between the two of them. And that's probably a good thing. Oh, I don't know. Edmund, speaking of potentially questionable choices.
Yes. Yeah, well, as some of you may have heard already, in addition to the all-female Ghostbusters film, we now have word from Sony that they are expanding the Ghostbusters film series into an entire film universe, with a new male-driven, action-centric film in development, produced by Channing Tatum, and possibly starring him as well. We have Drew Pierce from Iron Man 3 and Mission Impossible 5 writing the script. And I guess Sony is really scrambling now that we've had the whole Spider-Man crossover, changeover, etc. And there's just a weird part of me that's wondering, it's like, okay, so what is one movie poster going to be kind of pink oriented and the other one's going to be blue oriented? I don't know. I'm not quite sure what they're going for here.
I think they're going for oversaturation. That's my thought. Somebody made a really good point in an article and said, basically, are the studios really like overthinking or overestimating the demand for more Ghostbusters? I mean, granted, we all have this nostalgic feel for the original film, but even the sequel to the original is not exactly considered a classic. It mainly kind of rides on the reputation of its forebear. So I don't know if this is really a good idea to double down on something that I don't know is a proven commodity at all yet. What do you think, Gary?
I think there's money to be made, unfortunately, and that regardless of what they make, if you slap a Ghostbusters name on it, somebody's going to go see it. So the question is, how low budget can we bring it in for? And that's my honest opinion. I think they'll try and bring out anything they can that will make any amount of money, and I expect it to be very cheaply done with no-name people.
But what it sounds like right now is that it's being made with name people, which is kind of weird. And they're trying to create a universe out of it, which I think is even more weird. I mean,
well, I mean, I honestly think the premise itself lends itself open to other Ghostbuster departments, or buildings, groups, whatever. You know, in this world, they have proved that ghosts do exist, and that, you know, there could be a reason besides the Gosher coming back to cause the ghost to stir up. So, I think they could probably do this. I really don't want to see the L.A. version, because whenever they seem to do the L.A. version of any movie, it's usually pretty bad. So if they can stay out of California, I think they might have a shot.
Oh, maybe the L.A. version will be Eddie Murphy's career resurrecting. Maybe? No? Okay. Speaking of perhaps the L.A. version that should not happen, although we'll see how this works out, because at least right now the original series is doing fairly well. The Walking Dead has announced that its companion series, Title 2, still to be determined, is already up for an initial 2-season order. That's right. The new series will be set in L.A. and focused.
No, I did not read ahead, John. Honestly,
sure. And focused on new characters and storylines. The first season will consist of 6 1-hour episodes and premiere on AMC late this summer. The second season will air in 2016. Now, what's not really said here, other than the fact that they're really happy to get an early commitment on this, so that they can really play with this new cast and with new storylines, is that really the whole scheduling thing is to capitalize on the fact that The Walking Dead is really the biggest franchise that they've got on AMC right now. And they would really love to have this as a year-round show, but there's no way that with the existing parent show they could do that without killing the cast, literally. Just by putting them through the ringer so hard. So they want to kind of go back and forth between the two shows. And that's why they're putting out the first 6 this year. It's the earliest they can put it out will be as a kind of a lead in into the October premiere of season 6 of The Walking Dead. So we'll have a little bit of a gap between the end of this 5th season and that new show, but there is a desire to keep swapping back and forth half season long arcs, from what I understand. And Gary, are you worried about this, even though it is L.A., but are you going to be okay with this?
Well, I'm already worried that it's L.A., John, because I don't know what happens, but whoever is in L.A. thinks the rest of the country and world wants to see things go down Rodeo Drive or fly past the Capitol Record building. And most people really don't care. I'm included in them. So I really hope it does not become some sort of self-referential romp somewhere along the way. Also, if I recall correctly, this isn't based off any other written source material that like Kirkman ever wrote, is it?
No. This is all original stuff. As far as we know, it's, I think, maybe their attempt to be to do something in the universe that is not so easily quote unquote predictable, so that on the one sense people want to see what they have on the screen or on the page on screen, and then there's the people who would really like to see something new and that everybody can kind of come into fresh. And I think that's what the show is supposed to be about, for all intent purposes. It's that kind of hitting that other side of things, which isn't the best way of looking of putting it, but just basically nobody's going to go into the show knowing what exactly they're in for. And that also gives them the freedom not to have to mess too much with what people are looking for in terms of the adaptation, if that's phrasing it any better.
Yeah. Again, my hopes are not high.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the fact that they're setting this more recently after the onset of the apocalypse could be a good thing. We'll find out, but 6 episodes should be enough to give us some idea of the tone. I mean, that is essentially what we got with the original show, was that first season of just 6 episodes gave us really the primer for where they're starting out, right? So
yeah.
Of course, the show is very different now than it was at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So
yeah, although I do have to say that somebody's going to have to pay for Charlie Collier, the AMC president, actually quoting Monty Python, saying that they respectfully follow the request of Monty Python as we bring out the latest of our dead.
Oh, boy.
That's why he's the president and not the writer, I suppose.
Yeah. Peter Principle right there in full effect. Yes. Anyhow, Gary, this is news that is right up your alley, I think, this next one.
Covert Affairs is coming back. Oh, sorry. Yeah. So we're talking about the HBO. I don't want to quite call it a spinoff. I guess alternate access that's going to be made available come April. Apple has signed an exclusive contract with HBO to offer a product called HBO Now, which is pretty much dead on with what you have if you're able to watch HBO on a mobile device now. Except the one catch with this is it's not tied to your cable company in your house or anything like that. This is completely standalone. They're offering it for $15 a month, which is usually under most people's cable HBO bill. So I found that pricing also to be a very interesting sort of watermark for them to choose that particular value. And I believe the average HBO subscription rate is somewhere around $20 to $25 a month. So they're coming in under TV and you know, and you're not tied to a cable. So I imagine this is going to intrigue a lot more people to cut the cable and or just save $5 a month by subscribing on your mobile device or computer. So, again, that sort of surprises me. But at the same time, it is a nice coup for Apple because they're exclusive. None of those Samsungs or any other smartphone will be able to have standalone service for the immediate future. The model worked pretty well when they exclusived AT&T for a few years with the iPhones themselves. So I give kudos to them. I give kudos to HBO to be willing to aggravate their bread and butter cable subscribers. But this is the way the future is going. And much as HBO sort of really was the forerunner for cable television, maybe they're really going to be the forerunner to leave cable television.
I want to know who pissed them off. Is what it really comes down to. I mean, it sounds like what happened is that they felt like they were no longer able to negotiate with somebody and that the cable companies were playing hardball and they said, oh yeah, well, I bet we could do this.
Well, you know, you say that, John, and almost jest, but really, if you look at especially some of the fights that Verizon is currently having with the Weather Channel of all channels,
yes.
That Time Warner has had with CBS, and there's a host of other, you know, cable channels, I guess you'd call them, or sources that have been getting cut off by the different cable companies while they're strong arming them to come back with better deals, and the viewers are stuck, you know, with the short end of it. And maybe HBO did not want to, they want to deal from a position of strength, and this sure is saying we'll do it without you, and very easily. We have the technology, you know, and we're ready. We're going to do it right now. And so I wouldn't surprise me if they were starting to hear rumors or bubbles from one of these cable companies that were willing to pull HBO or something like that. And, you know, there's no real argument at this point anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, cable companies on a lot of fronts are getting squeezed by their own decisions, I guess you could say. Hoisted by their own petard? Is that that the right way to put it, perhaps? Not sure. Edmund.
Yes.
Speaking of things that are maybe trying to find a new direction in order to regain some of that old control.
Yes, indeed. Thanks to the latest PaleyFest Q&A panel, we got some news about Homeland Season 5, where apparently the show will be moving from the Middle East to Europe. The new season taking place in Germany. And they are also going to be jumping 2.5 years to a time when Carrie will no longer be an intelligence officer, but presumably still in private service somehow. I was amused though that I did see some comments about people hearing that. And even especially coming out of some of these PaleyFest panels, there can be a little bit of misdirection going on from the producers or leading people to build up an expectation that they can then quickly reverse. There was somebody wondering, it's like, oh, okay, so she's working for a security company in Germany for the 15 minutes until Saul comes up, you know, appears, or Quinn appears and tells her they need her for some important operation. So we shall have to see how permanent Carrie's separation from the CIA actually is.
It occurs to me that this is not unlike those times when Jack Bauer would say, I'm done, I'm out,
yes.
And then get pulled back in. It's and of course, it's the exact same people involved, which is why it comes to mind.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, because let's face it, last season did kind of end with her telling Saul that, you know, she doesn't trust him as far as she could throw him. And
yeah.
Quinn kind of deciding to stick with things, despite having said that he wasn't going to. It kind of left Carrie in a lurch. I could definitely see her deciding to go on her own for a while.
Absolutely.
And then getting yanked in. So, I mean, it all fits a picture. What kind of picture? I don't know, but it's a picture. We'll see. I mean, last season was a bit of a resurgence for them. They mainly had issues not when they were I should say that the main issue last season was not the action or any of that. It was when they tried to continue to go back to the well of her offspring that yes. things got problematic. You know, as soon as she would invoke Brody again, mm-hmm. Things would go straight to hell in a handbasket. So
yeah. I think there's definitely something to be said for, you know, yes, let the lesson of this show be, if you want to be really good at this, you have no personal life. You know, because we already have Saul as the older example of that. And, you know, I could definitely see Carrie kind of coming around to that as well.
Definitely. Now, Gary, this next one, I'm wondering how much you might be able to speak to this, because I was kind of wondering about what the timing of this, at any rate.
Well, the timing is that Marvel is making a buttload of money and DC is poised to do the same thing. So, of course, somebody else wants to get in, you know, get all this money that's pouring out of everywhere in milking of comic books. What the next news story is talking about is a comic book company known as Valiant. As the, I guess, the comic speculation of the 90s hit, Valiant was a very old company that sort of reopened its doors and started publishing. They grabbed rights to some existing characters as well as some of their own older from – and when I say older from the 60s at the time, characters that hadn't been published. And they started going back to press with them. People like Magnus Robot Fighter, Rye, Exo Man of War, and Bloodshot, and a few other ones. And some of them have quite novel twists on the superhero genre and were moderately successful. As the bubble started to burst, the Acclaim video company, you'll probably remember them from all the Intellivision titles if you're old enough to remember that console game. They did a lot of those, and they bought the comic book company hoping to make video games and publish comic books, and unfortunately they did not do very well, and they pretty much went bankrupt. Valiant was rebought about 2 or 3 years ago, and for not being one of the main two comic book companies, they are doing reasonably well. The artwork on their comic books is good. The storylines are reasonable. I wouldn't call them spectacular, but they're there. But what they have going for them, I think, are some very unique characters and some plot lines that could be followed to expand out into movies, books, and other things. And pretty much they've found investors that will do that, and they're teaming up with a large Chinese company that promises to start making movies, television pictures, and as well as, you know, merchandising, stuff like that. Sounds a little bit like what Marvel did several years ago, and yeah, it pretty much is. They've got a big cash infusion to start up their own studios and try and produce something. So we'll have to see where it goes. I'm looking forward to this, actually. My only concern is that I guarantee virtually none of these characters are known at all. So you are not going to get any name familiarity like a Captain America or an Iron Man or a Thor that the popular culture might have. I doubt many people know about, say, Bloodshot or Armstrong and Archer or several of their other core people, the Harbinger Group, for example. So I think they have a big hurdle to overcome. They just don't have the name recognition or the touchstones to popular culture that other people do. But I think there's good stories to be told, and really that's what it comes down to, isn't it? We want to see a movie with a great storyline, or read a book that, you know, goes someplace that we enjoy or are surprised by. And so I think the bones are there for it. How it's executed, of course, can always be a different story. Fantastic Four. And we'll have to see.
Yeah, my concern here is not whether or not the properties can be adapted into something good or not. I'm just looking at this and thinking, well, you know, last time it was the comic books, they came in as a company a few years late to the game during the 90s speculation era. And then here we are. DC is already kind of behind the times in terms of keeping up with Marvel in many respects with films and such. I mean, it's really actually, you know, many generations into the quote boom for superheroes. There's been a million comic adaptations, it feels like. Now we have an example of another studio trying to jump in this late in the game. It feels like they're going to get just far enough down the road to be on the possibly tail end of this, because who knows how long it's going to be. Otherwise, it's going to be something so fast and so cheap that it may wind up blowing up in their face. So I'm just wondering if it's too little too late.
Well, no. Well, you say that, and if you want to almost parallel their comic book life, or at least you know their first stage of comic book life, yeah, it was a fast in, fast out. They had a good, I'd say, 6 years where they were ranking, you know, within the top 20 to 30 books every week. So I mean, it's they are late, and will they ever become the big player like a Marvel or a DC? Probably not. They would hope they do, but you know, if they can put out a decent, you know, a decent product, and one thing to keep in mind, you know, we don't. We think of ourselves. We want to think of an American market. Their biggest partner right now is a Chinese group. And I, when I say that, what I mean is that, you know, no longer is America the place to make money off a movie. You go to China because they have 10 times the number of screens showing these movies that we do in the United States. So they make a lot more ticket money over there. Yeah, money might come back later in the, you know, DVD sales or you know, online viewing, but they make a lot of ticket money over in China. And we have to accept the fact that movies are not going to be made for solely for America anymore. And this group has, you know, has one or two prominent Asian characters in their core staple. And I'm sure that's where they're going to consider going with it.
That might actually, be a good point, and actually might help them kind of overcome that potential breakdown, you know, as far as the markets is concerned here in the U.S. I see, because they were the leading edge of it, I see Marvel being the last one who's going to really get hit by it. I think that they'll be able to sustain through at least their current plans without too much of loss on their investment. But I feel like once you get down to like DC, they're going to be pushing it because, you know, there are already people who aren't really happy with the direction that they're going. And anyone else who is involved in the U.S. market is going to be really up against the wall. And like you said, maybe they are thinking in terms of, why are we going to chase after that when we can chase after something else? And if we cater it more towards that Eastern audience, then we've got longevity in a different market. And it's not so much that they're competing for the same dollars as they are competing in for higher place in a different part of the market entirely. And so, like you said, it could just be strategy. They are thinking, we don't want to be the best in the world. We want to be the best in the market that is paying us.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably, you know, going to be their saving grace. Speaking of DC and perhaps not doing, perhaps struggling, even in terms of getting people on board in terms of casting, you know, originally Rick Flagg was supposed to be played by, I believe it was Tom Hardy. And then they had a couple other people that were on the list. Well, now they have finally cast someone named Joel Kinnaman, who I believe was last seen as RoboCop in the remake a couple years ago. So yeah. Apparently he loves the script. It's very entertaining. He says David Ayer is an interesting director. So we'll see how this goes. But, you know, it's one of those people that was thrown out there as a big name, Tom Hardy, and it got replaced by someone with somewhat less credentials, shall we say. So I'm just curious about that because it seems like they're really already struggling to cast their films anyway. DC's doing great on TV. I think we all agree that Berlanti and all those guys are doing a really great job as producers on the TV side. But when it comes to the films, I mean, if it's not part of the Nolan Snyder main line of films, there seems to be a little bit of a struggle going on. What do you think, Gary?
Just to keep it really short, because I don't know that much about the actor. As you mentioned, Arrow and Flash, I think to myself, how many people in those casts did I have any clue of who they were before they started actually working? Virtually no one. So, you know, let's try and keep an open mind, and maybe they are hiring good people that will do well just because they don't get paid, six to seven figure salaries on a regular basis doesn't mean that they won't be good actors. So I'm trying to keep my mind open to that. I suggest everybody else does too.
Yeah. You know, you raise a good point that maybe not having these big egos involved will be a good thing rather than have to worry about all these people trying to share the screen. I mean, we've already got people like Will Smith who were, reportedly not happy with the fact that the film isn't about them. So we'll have to see how this goes. Gary, actually, you have the next one here, and I think that this harkens back to what you were talking about in the open.
Oh yeah, and this honestly took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it at all, but how do we want to refer to this? I will actually say, I can't say Lucas. I don't want to say Disney. I will say the Star Wars group. There you go. the Star Wars group has announced that they will be having over 20 different books released to fill the gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. From what I read, these won't all be novels because some of the people they mention, I swear, are doing comic books. They're not only that, but oddly enough, they're going to be releasing them from 7 different publishers. I would have assumed they would have kept this all in-house, but maybe I don't think every book's going to be a novel. They have publishers besides, of course, their own Disney's own publishing imprints like Hyperion, Marvel Comics, but they're also going to have Delray Books as well and some other publishing houses publish these books. So it sort of strikes me as odd. Either they're reaching out for different talent, or maybe they're going to talk and have graphic novels or something like that. They haven't gone into that much, but there will be some novels. So those of us who miss Star Wars novels will be getting their taste of it. However, as I pointed out earlier, as I was talking about this, this will be filling the gap between Return of the Jedi to The Force Awakens. So what that means, of course, yes, all the extended universe can just be kissed goodbye if it doesn't show up in one of these books. Yeah. Marriage Aid, all the Rogue Squadron novels, all the different times the clones of the Emperor came back, the Thrawn trilogy, just kick it to the wind. That doesn't exist, at least not once these 20 books come out. So while I too mourn the extended universe and the great things that were able to be done with it over the years, they are making an effort to fill that gap with some hopefully teasers as well as full fleshed out stories as to how we get from point A to point B.
Yeah, it's about time that they did this, quite frankly, because the books that have been quote unquote canon so far that have been published have been only about mediocre. There was A New Dawn, which was, of course, the lead in to Rebels, but it wasn't really all that great. It was kind of just there. Quite frankly, Rebels didn't need a whole lot of lead in.
I mean, given the time period, it's sandwiched right between the first two trilogies anyway. So,
right.
Yeah, it doesn't need much setup.
And there was a book that was recently put out, very recently put out, that I believe was, I want to say Heir to the Jedi or something like that. That was, Heir to the Force, Heir to the Jedi, one of those two. And it's basically a first-person narrative from Luke in between episodes 4 and 5. And I would just avoid that. It's really not the best of the new novels at all. I mean, Tarkin was okay. It was probably the best of the newer ones that are considered in canon. But there is nothing on the level of an Heir to the Empire back in the days of, you know, Tim Zahn and the... And that whole Thrawn trilogy. I mean, we haven't seen anything like that out there. Now, it is interesting, like I said, Gary, they're putting out all of these different, 20 different books. They're not saying novels necessarily, but books to cover the gap and of a variety. Marvel, of course, is now the official comics line for Star Wars.
Yeah, Dark Horse lost the contract as it went back to Marvel. And if you were lucky enough to catch, they were selling up through Christmas last year, they were selling their complete Star Wars catalog for about $125. It was quite a deal.
Wow.
I had most of them already, so I wasn't worth going in for. But, I mean, it was somewhere over 100-plus comic books, so you were under a dollar a piece. It was a really good deal.
Yes, so those are now considered – the Dark Horse stuff is now considered non-canon, and mm-hmm. you have the Marvel stuff that is quote-unquote in canon. Of course, a lot of that material is during or interspersed with the original films so that they are not stepping on any toes, but apparently they are going to have comics coming out that will start the road towards Episode 7.
Well, Marvel has already started putting out a few different comic books. There's a Darth Vader book that recently came out. There's a Princess Leia book that's coming out, and there's an actual Star Wars title that's currently coming out now too. I think they're on book 3 already of that. So
right. And Del Rey books, the novel line goes through them. They had the license for the extended universe novels or expanded universe novels previously. However, now all of that is under the Legends line, and the new books are just the quote-unquote Star Wars. I mean, it doesn't have any type of banner on it, but it is essentially the new canon, and that's where the books that I mentioned are out. So any novels, full-length, you know, not YA, junior, you know, novelization-type level books would be going through Del Rey. I'm not sure about any...
Oh, yeah, they are going to have young adult novels out as well. So.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if they're Del Rey or if they're out of Disney. It wasn't clear to me, but I know Del Rey is doing the quote-unquote, you know, alt, I guess you could say, adult. Not meaning, you know, mature, but you get the idea. But certainly I'm looking forward to at least the novels that are involved and probably the comics. I don't know that I'll get into much of anything else. But it is interesting that they are essentially saying to underscore the fact that the expanded universe stuff is non-canon, they are going to set forth the timeline between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, and that's going to be the canon tapestry that will be filled in as time goes by, whether it be any of these standalone films or further novels and comics in the future. But it's going to set the course, and that's going to be the course from now
on. And just as a side note, as I said, those 20 books are not 20 novels. There will be comic books, even kid sticker books, young adult novels, and a few other genres. They're basically trying to, you know, touch pretty much any print genre there possibly is and throw something at it. So.
Exactly. It's not like they're saying, oh, in you know, the space of a few months, there's going to be 20 novels out that you need to read in order. No, it's nothing like that at all. It's going to be little pieces here and there on all kinds of different material types. So I imagine that there will be enough for everybody to kind of get their feet wet as far as the new history going into Force Awakens, which, of course, we know that is the end of the year. So there's a the timer is going down on this one. They don't have a lot of time to get all their ducks in a row, but once they do, it's going to be a full court press. We're going to see a ton of stuff come out. Just to kind of go off the Star Wars vein for a little bit, we have some other casting news. Lauren German, formerly of Chicago Fire, is now going to be in the pilot for Lucifer, which we mentioned the other day. She's going to be the female lead on the show opposite Tom Ellis. And, so once again, it's not saying a whole lot about this. They just say that Lucifer is expected to air this fall on Fox if the pilot gets picked up. All right, let's see. Edmund, this is good news for us.
Yes, absolutely. Sci-Fi has announced that 12 Monkeys has been greenlit for a second season, within the phrasing that I find a little bit strange, saying expected to air in 2016. So I don't know why there's a little bit of uncertainty there, but there will be a couple of changes in the production staff. Natalie Chaydez is apparently moving on to her next sci-fi series, so Terry Matalas and Travis Fickett, who are the current co-executive producers and the guys who wrote the pilot, will be stepping up as showrunners. So at least it is the people who obviously helped set everything up. So not too worried about that. The show not only has been gaining praise from us, but it's been getting decent numbers for them and is experiencing what they are now calling record L3 lifts. I presume that is live plus three, even though L3 automatically makes me think of Lagrange points, but that's just because I read a lot about O'Neill colonies back in the 70s. But it has been picking up 104% on its live plus three. So, of course, not that my numbers are counted in that, but that is the way I watch it. So it's especially good for a Friday night show where it airs and then a lot of people catch up with it by the end of the weekend. It's also been gaining momentum recently. Most recent episode, as of this article, the one on March 6th, was an increase of 6% over the prior 4 weeks. So that's good news. The president of Sci-Fi saying that we are absolutely committed to 12 Monkeys. Talent both on and off screen have delivered a series that has us all on the edge of our seats, providing exactly the smart, exciting storytelling Sci-Fi is known for. So apparently he goes out on Saturday nights and doesn't necessarily watch his own network. But other than that, certainly very, very good news that 12 Monkeys will be coming back. And as they also say, can't wait to see where and when they take us next.
Yeah, they're probably being cagey about the scheduling only because Sci-Fi keeps playing around with that. But also for this show, maybe not the worst of tie-ins to say something like that, because who knows where the story's going to go. this is one of those examples of a show that I think I could not have been more skeptical about before it started, and I'm still to this. I'm just shocked week after week at the fact that they have found a way to take a film that seemed fairly self-contained and turn it into something that makes sense as a series. Really, it's just the name is The Hook, but it's a huge time travel extravaganza type of thing. And like I've said before, it's everything that Helix wants to be in terms of serious sci-fi. At least what we assume Helix wants
to
be.
Well, yeah, what we thought that it wanted to be, although I'm not quite sure now.
And I tell you, the more that... Anyway, we'll get into that.
We will get into that next time.
Yes. Gary, let's get back to some Star Wars news.
Yeah, I was going to say, John, we 20 books weren't enough. We need more. Well, they gave us more during a Disney corporate meeting this week. They revealed that the first standalone film from Star Wars, when I say standalone, I mean it won't be part of an ongoing trilogy such as The Force Awakens and the two films that follow that. The first film is going to be called Rogue One. I have hopes for this one. It was inspired by someone who actually does work at Lucas. He's actually the chief creative officer at Industrial Light and Magic. The guys that do all the special effects came up with the idea for this film, and he's actually going to follow it through production. So as far as us having hopes that, someone who gets it will do this movie, this is probably about as close as we'll see to that.
Yeah, we'll see if they get it so well that they realize that Michael Stackpole's books from the expanded universe are a really good place to start.
I was going to say I've not heard Wedge Antilles' name mentioned anywhere yet, but for those of us with the extended universe as well as the actual core trilogies, that was his call sign, was Rogue One. So we will have to see if they are willing to salvage any part of the expanded universe with this. So, but we can hope, because, and I have a decent hope, because unlike some of the extended universe, the Rogue Squadron has had quite a life. They've had more than a dozen of their own novels. They've had at least 2 to 3 different video games that I'm aware of. So, within the subgenre of Star Wars, they have stood out a bit. And so I was pleasantly surprised to actually hear that title, hoping that they will draw on some of it. Now, also as a side note, it is going to be set in the original, around the original trilogy of movies. And the hint or rumor is that it involves a group of bounty hunters who might be trying to steal plans for the Death Star. Okay. So I guess that means we might get to see some Boffins. I'm not sure, but, we'll see.
That many of them died trying to get that information. So it may be appropriate.
Well, there's the whole argument that really you're talking about the guy, Manny Boffins. as opposed to some race. But once again, this might be the chance to clear that up.
It might be. All right. Let's see. Because Disney is not content to really just make an extravaganza around Star Wars, as they should be. There is, of course, the talk about what to do with Frozen. No pun, comments from the peanut gallery of what to do with Frozen. But they've already got a short film that is out there that is running in front of Cinderella. Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella, no less, which I find hilarious. But there, that is only the beginning. Apparently, they are also going to finally have the announcement of Frozen 2.
Oh, did anyone have any doubt whatsoever there was going to be a Frozen 2?
They were never going to let that go. Really? So it was just, it was a foregone conclusion. I think we all know that. And frankly, I have to say this. The problem with Frozen is not the actual film. I think that most of us, when we first saw it, liked the film for what it was. The problem is the fact that they've run it into the freaking ground. And they really need to give it a little bit of a rest. But of course, they won't. And so my concern is that they're going to take all the things that were good about the film and really just wash them away in the desire to turn this into a... what shall we call it? A cash cow? Is that
well,
the best
John,
way to put it?
I'd like to point out, when you say cash cow, you're talking about $1.5 billion cash cow. You're not talking about something that, like, oh, made $500,000 and woohoo, we're happy we covered costs and pocketed a little extra money. They have made a metric butt ton.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
That's your point,
John. It's scary that I was thinking the same thing. they a metric buttload of money off this. I mean, they've made a literally a fortune off this one film.
Yeah, that's Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm not disputing that in any way.
And when I say $1.5 billion, that does not include every stupid little Elsa doll or dress or wig or anything. That's just video. I mean, that's movie and video only. They're at $1.5 billion. I'm sure it's crossed $2 billion with all the different stuff they're selling related to it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way they're not going to run that into the ground. So there we are.
You should be at Disney lately. Frozen this, Frozen that. Good gosh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'll be there later this year, so we will probably be just as inundated as everybody else. Yeah. Maybe I'm just a little bitter. You know, it seems like Elsa just had it in for the Northeast this year, so it's we're not on the best of terms.
You only had about 8 weeks of snow. You know, it wasn't that.
Could have been worse. You could have been in Boston.
That's true. I could have been and was decidedly not. Anyhow, what else do we have left on this? I think, Gary, you have one last thing here. I just had to make sure that this news got out, and it seemed like you were the perfect person to bring this to life.
Thank you, John. I never thought you were going to let me sing on the show again. Flash Gordon. What you're talking about, of course, is the sequel to the 1980 Queen extravaganza known as Flash Gordon. They not only are going to come up with a sequel for it, but there is a ongoing strong rumor that Sam Jones, who originally played Flash Gordon, will be appearing in it, and more than just a cameo. So we'll have to see how that works out. Of course, if for younger listeners who haven't seen this, it really does have a great soundtrack, and it's a cute story, and if you view it from the original source material from the 20s and 30s, I think they did a decent job with it. It doesn't stand up to hard science fiction criticism, but it's never meant to be, so don't take it as such. When you hear Star Wars referred to as sort of sci-fi fantasy, not really. This is what they mean when they talk about sci-fi fantasy. This is much more whimsical. And if you keep a sharp eye out on the original, you would even see a James Bond make an appearance. But for the future one, I'm not so sure. But I'm curious the working budget, which they haven't revealed yet. So I'm not sure how they're going to really go for this. To keep it up with the original 1980 version, I would think they'd need a fairly decent budget. So we'll have to see.
I really hope they go all out on making this a sequel.
Lots of gold, shiny gold lame and everything. Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm very amused to see that Sam Jones, yes, is still embodying the character and is basically threatening to challenge any younger leading man they bring into it to a pull up and push up contest.
That's perfectly in keeping with the character as he played it. But
exactly.
Anyhow.
Exactly.
Although yes. I don't know if you can do a Ming like that anymore in this day and age.
You know, that's a
so I don't know if racist is the right word or stereotypical or jingoistic. I don't know that you can pull that off now.
Yeah, although I will also mention if they're looking to the original cast, Brian Blessed is still alive and still active and just as wonderful and bellicose as ever. So
who's that?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to say that when I was young, I mean, especially with cable running it literally every day,
yes.
This was just always one of those favorites. I mean, it will always, and of course the soundtrack. I mean, come on, Freddie Mercury was already, you know, a paean of the age for us, but Flash Gordon soundtrack, genius, pure genius. We'll just have to see what this turns into, but I could see this being glorious in so many ways that the current generation just does not understand. Anyhow, that's where we're going to leave this for this show. We will be back next time, as aforementioned, with the best and the worst of the week. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes. in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.